afternoon, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Holland, Justice Berger, Justice Jacobson, Justice Ridgely. Tom Donovan on behalf of the appellant, Jan White. Would the court care to have a brief recitation of the facts in this matter?
I think by now we're pretty familiar with them, although if there's some salient facts you think we need to be reminded of, go right ahead.
I can certainly touch on them as I go through. This is an appeal from the trial held in the Superior Court here in Kent County, and essentially the issue here is whether or not the state had proved trafficking to a sufficient degree to sustain the conviction of trafficking in cocaine. As we pointed out in the brief and the court is aware, we cited to the case of Lonergan versus State, which relies on Potts and Holden, which essentially states that the state must prove that there is more than proximity to or awareness of a drug in order to prove possession.
So we're focusing on the 100 grams in the closet. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, that was going to be my first question. To what convictions are you actually appealing? From what part of the judgment below?
From the trafficking conviction, the 177-plus grams inside the master bedroom walk-in closet. There was an ongoing investigation of the apartment 765-5 Bacon Avenue. Been a year-long investigation conducted by the Dover police. Through their investigation, they determined that Ebony Russell leased this apartment and her boyfriend, James White, lived there with her. And during the course of this year, they had discovered there were drug sales or drug transactions going on inside that apartment, and they applied for and were given a search warrant, which they executed a year later, January 29th of 04. Upon entering into the apartment, they found three individuals, Ebony Russell, Jan White, the appellant, and Mr. Eric Coleman. The facts show that this is the first time they had any contact or any knowledge of Jan White being present in the apartment.
And does the record reflect that they found her standing at the entrance to the closet?
The record does show that the three individuals were standing near the bedroom closet door, the master, the walk-in closet. There were actually two closets in the bedroom, but yes, where the 177 grams were found. She was in close proximity, I guess, the court could find, to the drugs inside the closet. There was, in addition, there was some cash inside the closet. There was some marijuana and some other crack-based cocaine inside the closet. The jury actually acquitted Ms. White of the marijuana possession, which was found inside the closet. So there's somewhat of an inconsistent.
That was in a man's shoe, wasn't it?
The marijuana was. And cocaine was actually inside a man's shoebox as well, a Timberland shoebox.
But were there shoes in it, or was it just a box?
It was just a box. And the testimony was that the closet was actually very neat and orderly, as opposed to the bedroom itself, which was, and I quote, a mess. The facts were not in dispute that Mrs. White...
Is it clear that she was staying in that bedroom?
Yes, that was admitted. She had been there approximately 3 weeks. She was injured on both legs or both feet. She was in Christiana Hospital and had been discharged about 3 weeks prior to essentially her son's care at the apartment. There was a wheelchair inside the apartment, and her both feet were bandaged. So there was no reason not to believe Miss White that she had just been recently staying there. All her belongings were in the bedroom. There were none of her belongings inside the closet. They were in trash bags, and they were kind of strewn around the room. What was also found inside the bedroom, as opposed to the closet, when I speak to the bedroom, I'm referring to just the bedroom and not the closet and what the differences were between the two. There were found a homemade pipe, some scouring pads, a spoon, a knife, and as described by Detective Boney in the court below, items that were used or indicative of drug user paraphernalia.
And they were on the dresser?
Yes, there was a dresser.
And then there was other drug-related items in the kitchen, in the sink, that were visible?
There was a pot, which there was some testimony that it appeared to be crack residue or cocaine residue, although it was never sent out for testing. There was a scale inside of a food box inside the cabinet. So that wasn't exactly in plain view.
That was in addition to the visible items in the kitchen.
That's correct.
And is it true that when she was searched at the police station, she had 8 bags of drugs in her socks, although they were different colors?
That's right. And I think that's significant, and the court should consider that it was dyed in a pink color, and that was brought out to the jury's attention. There was no evidence that there was any pink dye or food coloring inside the apartment, which would be indicative that the crack cocaine was dyed somewhere else.
Well, help us focus. You know, we've talked about all of this evidence. If we just take the evidence we've talked about in our few questions to you and what you've recited, your argument is that looking at this evidence as a matter of law, the trafficking should have been dismissed. And the state's argument is, if you look at this as a matter of law, we've made a circumstantial case, and it should go to the jury. And you can argue she was there temporarily. You can argue whatever you want to argue. But as a matter of law, this doesn't appear to be like an innocent presence.
Well, I think that it actually does show that even if she had knowledge that the cocaine was present inside the closet or inside the apartment, it doesn't show that she actually possessed it. And I think the law should require that the charge be dismissed. The investigation itself was an ongoing investigation conducted by the police and the state, and they gathered a ton of information about drug activity inside this apartment, none of which pointed to Jan White or J.F. Parker, as her name in the hospital before she came to the apartment and as she told the police. There's no statements. There's no evidence of any indication that she knew what was going on inside the apartment.
You do understand that what Justice Holland is looking for is a standard that we would apply to these facts in order to be able to say that as a matter of law, there is no jury issue, that this should have been removed from the jury, and a motion for a judgment of acquittal granted or whatever. What you're arguing to us is what one would argue to a jury. How does it become, as he suggested to you, an issue of law for us to consider de novo and conclude that the charge should have been dismissed by the trial judge?
Well, I suppose the standard is that no reasonable juror could have found that based on the facts that Ms. White could have been convicted of the trafficking. A circumstantial case would have been some other evidence indicating that she was involved in the sale or the trafficking of drugs, some sort of indication she lived at the apartment, that she was...
I thought the trafficking here focused on the amount. That you know, once you get to that amount, the question is, could they associate her with that amount of drugs? And that quantity of drugs is what would lead to the trafficking independent of anything else. Is that right or wrong?
That is how the law in Delaware is, just weight and possession.
Well, I follow up on the Chief Justice's question, because as a matter of law, you're saying that there was an absence of evidence that she was involved in doing something, and that's not really the question as a matter of law, is that the question is, given this quantity, as a matter of law, was there enough evidence for the jury to decide she was involved with it or she wasn't?
Well, certainly we could ask the court, and the court could certainly determine that there should be another added element to the trafficking. Of course, that's not the question presented to the court today, but really what we focused on is the possession of cocaine. And if it's possession, it should be some sort of possession involved in the sale or in the trafficking of drugs. The mere fact that she's present inside the apartment is not enough to convict on the trafficking.
Is it that no reasonable juror could conclude that she possessed in the legal sense, the 177 grams that was in the closet, as opposed to 6.5 grams of crack cocaine in the shoe in the walk-in closet, which was a woman's shoe, apparently, or what was found in her sock at the police station?
That's correct. That's correct.
And the reasons that no reasonable jury could reach that conclusion are what?
The reason why the jury couldn't reach that conclusion is that the crack cocaine, the pink crack cocaine, is physically different than the other cocaine, and it was on her person. There's no argument that she didn't possess the rock cocaine in her sock. Now, the testimony was that the other crack cocaine was inside a woman's shoe. However, the facts show that that shoe didn't belong to Ms. White, that, in fact, all her possessions were deemed to be found in trash bags outside of the bedroom closet. There's no indication that she had access or control over the closet. And there's nothing inside the closet linking her to anything inside that closet, the drugs, the money, the shoes, the nightstand, anything. It wasn't an area in which she had access to or control over.
Well, it's not like the jury wasn't focused on the nature of possession, because they found her not guilty of possession of the marijuana, correct?
That's right.
So they understood the distinction between it's not her closet and the pink rock cocaine in her sock, as opposed to the powder cocaine of 177 grams that was in the walk-in closet. So help us figure out, was that jury lenity, or was that a careful dissection of the facts by the jury where they apportion elements of possession to one drug but not to another?
Well, I think the mere fact that it was 177 grams probably shocked the jury somewhat, and probably couldn't get over the fact that there was 177 grams inside a closet, and perhaps concluded that there's no way Ms. White couldn't have known about the drugs if there was that quantity of drugs inside the apartment. But having given that, they probably, or we argue, they misapplied the law, the test for possession, that if she knew about the drugs, because it was her son who was also convicted of trafficking, if it was his son, she was there for 3 weeks, she must have known what was going on, so therefore she's guilty as either as a co-conspirator or an accomplice. But the evidence doesn't show anything more than knowledge or proximity. There was marijuana, there was tested trace amounts of marijuana.
Maybe we're now getting close to the standard. What does possession for the purpose of trafficking, put quantity aside for a moment, what's the legal standard that has to be met before a jury could conclude that someone possessed the 177 grams of powder cocaine that's contested here?
That at the time that she was arrested, that she had dominion and control over that quantity of cocaine.
That would require, at the very least, that she know that the cocaine, the 170-plus grams, are in the closet, correct?
That's correct. She would have to know what the weight of the drugs were, and, or at least that there was...
And did I understand you correctly to say that the record reflects that she did know that? Or at least there was enough evidence from which a jury could have found that she knew it was there?
No, in fact, I think the record has avoided that fact, that she knew how much cocaine was inside that closet.
Well, she could know that the cocaine's there, but still not possess it, because, just to take a hypothetical case, because she also knew that it was her son's drugs, not hers.
Right.
And so all I'm asking is, did she know that the drugs, the 177 grams, were in the closet?
There's no indication that she did know. As perhaps the state proved that she was close to the drugs when they were found, but there is no indication that she knew the drugs were inside the...
Or that she didn't.
Right.
And she had access, so that nobody was preventing her from opening up the closet.
We don't know if she had the authority to go in to the closet. She may have certainly had access. We don't know if there was a lock on the closet door or not. There was no evidence to present it, but there's no evidence to indicate that she couldn't access the closet. However, I think the facts show that she chose not to because she was she kept her living quarters a mess and didn't mess up the closet. I think that was a significant fact.
So your position is even if she inferentially had knowledge that her son was dealing in powder cocaine, that there are insufficient evidence for any reasonable juror to conclude on these facts that she had anything more than knowledge that there might be cocaine on the premises. She had no dominion or control over what turned out to be 177 grams in the closet, much less the quantity that was in the closet.
Yes, thank you, Chief Justice.
Is that a fair statement of your position?
Yes. That's.
Was the jury instructed on constructive possession?
Your Honor, I believe they were. I believe they were given a standard instruction which included constructive possession.
And that essentially would say what?
That one can possess an item not on their person. One can possess an item within their dominion or control if they have authority and access to it.
Were they instructed on accomplice liability?
I don't know the answer to that. I can tell you that she was tried and convicted of conspiracy in the second degree. So there may have been certainly an accomplice liability instruction.
And that's conspiracy second to trafficking.
Yes.
As opposed to any other of the other charges.
That's correct. And again, that's not important as the trafficking charge or as serious as the trafficking charge. But there was no other evidence or any other testimony that she conspired with anyone inside the apartment. There was no co-conspirator statements elicited or presented to the jury.
Mr. Donovan, if the cocaine that was found in Ms. White's sock was identical to the type of cocaine, the powdered cocaine that was found in the 177 grams in the bag, would that create a jury issue of constructive possession?
I believe so. I believe there could be a logical inference that the cocaine was the same in the sock and in the closet. Certainly, that would the argument would be a lot weaker from my point if they were the same. But because they were different, and there's no evidence to show that crack cocaine, the pink rocks, were manufactured in the house and became pink inside the house in the apartment. So there's also evidence presented that the day before the search warrant was executed, Mr. White sent a MoneyGram to Wilmington to Mr. Coleman, who came down that day, who traveled from Wilmington that day to visit with his wife. And he was never arrested, no statements taken, but the inference is that crack cocaine could have come from another source. And that would also support that Ms. White had no knowledge. If she had knowledge of the cocaine being inside the apartment, or if there was crack cocaine, perhaps she wouldn't have brought it in from outside. That's, again, knowledge is not enough.
The good news and bad news is I don't know that much about cocaine, but the pot that was apparently being used to cook or manufacture crack cocaine, that's a quote as I understand it from the transcript, that has no relationship to the rock cocaine that was in her sock?
Unfortunately, there was no differentiation between the rock cocaine in the closet and in her sock in terms of the charges, because it was just a possession with intent to deliver cocaine, generally speaking. It wasn't separated out into different quantities. But that, of course, was natural in color, that crack cocaine in the closet in the lady's shoe.
But if you're in the process of cooking it, I understand from the record that it's not uncommon to put food coloring in to try and disguise what you're doing.
I think that the facts show that that was the theory, and I think that was kind of a weak attempt at garnering some sympathy from the jury to indicate that she said it was nerds candy for children. But I think that what reasonable also is to show where the drugs came from. It's sort of a calling card that drug dealers may employ to get the word out, sort of like a business card.
Okay, but what I'm trying to piece together here is that if they find on your client pink rock cocaine, right, and they find in the house a large quantity of powdered cocaine, and they also find cooking equipment that has traces of cocaine, is it inappropriate to make a connection if a juror sees fit to do that, that says, okay, in this house they had a lot of powder cocaine that they put in the kitchen on the pot and turned into rock cocaine and put in some pink coloring, and guess what? Your client had some of the finished product, so to speak, in her sock. Isn't that potentially the way it went?
Yes, that could be one way to look at, I guess, to look at it. However, the police made certainly a thorough search and could not come up with any pink food coloring or pink dye or anything to indicate that the pink rock came from inside the house. And I would also ask the court to consider that pot was never tested. There's a choice we have to make as to whether or not to bring something up to a jury time and time again, but that was essentially an opinion without any scientific support, whether or not it could have been any number of substances.
Mr. Donovan, one quick factual question. Were any of Ms. White's possessions, clothing or anything else, found in the closet, in the walk-in closet?
No.
You want to save the balance of your time?
Yes, please. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. May it please the court, if I can briefly respond to a question Justice Ridgely asked. On the jury instructions on the trafficking allegation, the jury was charged as to constructive possession, that was an alternative, so they were informed about that. The standard here, this is a de novo review, and the standard this court employs is to determine whether a rational trier of fact, viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, could have found the essential elements of trafficking cocaine. What you have to prove in this particular case was the weight of the cocaine in excess of 100 grams, and the trafficking allegation was based on possession. The possession in this case, since the 100 grams was not found on her person, only the 4.67 grams, I believe, was found in her sock, would be constructive possession. In this particular case, it's circumstantial evidence, but in the conviction context, the circumstantial evidence is viewed to have the same effect in terms of a standard of proof as direct evidence here. Now, what was the evidence that was before the jury? Well, the evidence was
Before you go there, and yes. I apologize for interrupting, but are we going to analyze that evidence in terms of whether it established dominion and control over the 177 grams in the closet? Is that the purpose of...
Yes, I think you have to show that.
There's no issue about quantity here.
No.
There's no issue about whether she had to know it was 177 grams or 100 grams or 7 grams. The issue is whether she had dominion and control over what turned out to be 177 grams of powder cocaine, correct?
Yes, I think that's the only issue. I think there is some case law that says you can be convicted of trafficking even though the state may not be able to prove that the defendant knew the exact weight of the drugs. But what the issue is, and I think the way the jury was also instructed, you have to show direct or constructive possession. Possession means dominion, control, or authority, was the way the jury was instructed here. So,
while we have you interrupted, Mr. Williams, was the container in the closet a shoebox for men or women?
I believe it was a men's shoebox. And in the shoebox, there was 177 grams of powdered cocaine. What was in her sock was what they call rock cocaine that had been cooked.
So we have a situation. We heard the questions about the facts where she didn't use the closet for her own clothes. They were in the bags outside the closet. And the state's case is because she was using the bedroom for a couple of weeks that she constructively possessed the cocaine in a men's shoebox inside the closet.
Yes, that's the logical nexus or connection there. And the other evidence, I think, that demonstrates that is that this was an ongoing enterprise here, that when the police entered to execute the search warrant on the afternoon, they observed in plain view a silver pot in the kitchen sink. The significance of the silver pot was that it had a white residue that appeared to the officers to resemble cocaine. And the theory that the police had and what they testified to was that this is a mechanism or means to manufacture crack cocaine. You take the powder cocaine, you cook it, and that's how you manufacture or produce the rock cocaine.
So is there any significance to the fact that the residue wasn't tested?
Well, other than the fact that it certainly would have been better evidence had it been tested. The difficulty you have with residue is if the amounts are small, you may not be able to test it. But it did appear to experienced officers resemble cocaine. That's a question of the weight of the evidence, I think, not the admissibility, that testimony was still admissible and the jury could draw whatever conclusions they wanted. It obviously didn't have expert testimony backing it up to say definitively that it is cocaine, so they're going to have to draw that inference. But that's part of the standard of review here, is that the rational trier of fact is permitted to draw reasonable or logical inferences from the evidence here.
The purpose of it is to link that residue to the pink rock cocaine and to the powdered cocaine in the closet, correct?
Yes, I think you've got to show that there's this ongoing cocaine operation here. They have a large amount of
powdered
cocaine.
So then is there any significance to whether the residue was pink or not, or whether there was any food coloring found that could make it, that could color it pink ultimately, similar to what was found in her sock?
Well, I think it would be helpful if they had have found that, and we don't know, you know, when it was.
Well, I think we can get a quick unanimous 5-0 on that one. But.
No, the police didn't find any food coloring. We don't know when it was colored. She said her testimony, Jan White's testimony, was that she had been there several weeks.
Well, the question is not when it was colored. The question is if it was colored.
Well, that's correct, too. And you know, I guess that's the second step, when and if food coloring had been used and used up and then thrown out. We don't know. The police did not find food coloring. What they did find, however, was a digital scale that was apparently being secreted inside a food box in the kitchen, as well as the silver pot.
Well, what the defense tries to portray is, and this ongoing investigation was focusing on the son. And if we take all the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, the son was the person who was trafficking in cocaine, maintaining the dwelling, doing all of these things in the charges. And what this defendant's trying to do is say, I'm a drug user. I was there for 3 weeks, but there's no connection between me and what's going on in the closet. It's my son's enterprise.
Well, that's certainly the defense argument, and I think the biggest problem is that the pot shows that fairly recently, unless they're very untidy housekeepers, they were cooking this stuff up. The son isn't there when the police arrive to execute the search warrant. The real problem Jan White has, she tells the police her name's Jaya Parker, and that's the other criminal impersonation charge, but her real problem is that she has cocaine in her sock. And it's a fairly large amount, according to the police officers. It's in excess of an eight ball, and I think it's 4.6 some grams. before we amended the trafficking statute in 2003 that 5 grams was the beginning of a trafficking charge. So she had what used to be slightly under trafficking weight. The police officer also testified that having 8 bags wouldn't be consistent with someone being a user as opposed to a seller or distributor of cocaine. You wouldn't buy that much cocaine in small bags like that. It wouldn't make financial sense.
Well, that supported the possession with intent to deliver charge, didn't it?
Yes. And I think the difficulty, though, from the defendant's point of view, though, is that that shows she's also a drug dealer. And she's there in an apartment that's being used to manufacture and distribute cocaine. The police had made undercover buys before they executed the search warrant. That was the basis for getting the search warrant here. So I think
were those undercover buys while she was residing there?
I don't think the record indicates one way or the other on that. I don't know if any of them were, so I can't say that she was present when any of the undercover buys were actually made by the police as part of the investigation. The investigation had gone on for about a year before the search warrants executed.
Let me back you up to something that you said a moment ago. And if I understood you correctly, you seem to place some significance on the fact that the son was not there when the police arrived and executed the warrant, right?
Correct.
And I guess you want us to infer from that that since there was evidence of cooking of cocaine going on pretty much at the time that the police arrived, because there was a pot on the stove and all that, and because the son was not even in the house at the time, that means that the mother must have been participating in cooking the cocaine. Is that the sequence that you're asking that we infer from these facts?
Well, she may have either been involved in cooking the cocaine, or at least she's left behind in the apartment to mine the store. In other words, she's got cocaine in her sock that's ready for distribution. It's in small enough amounts that it could be distributed to purchasers here. So I think the inference that a reasonable trier of fact could draw is that there's this ongoing cocaine distribution enterprise going on here. They're cooking up powder cocaine, turning it into crack cocaine, and selling it.
Okay, but there were other people there besides the mother, the defendant, at the time the police arrived, right? Weren't there 3 people?
Yes, there were 3 people. There was Mr. Coleman, who either was or had been married to Jan White, and then there was Ebony Russell, who I believe was James White, the son's girlfriend, and she was actually the lessee of the apartment. So I think the problem, though, with that is that when the police start questioning these 3 people, Coleman and Russell, they're fairly forthright, at least in terms of identifying themselves. They say who they are. But what does Jan White do? She doesn't admit who she is. She says she's this person named Jaya Parker. And in addition to using a false name, she also says that she is the aunt of James White, not his mother. So I think that's additional evidence that she's sort of attempting to elude detection and certainly trying to distance herself in some degree from her son here by claiming to be the aunt.
That may be, but how does that strengthen the case evidence-wise for constructive possession of the 177 grams of powdered cocaine?
Well, I think it shows a consciousness of guilt, at least. Now, is it a question of, is it just guilt of this?
4.65 grams on her sock, for God's sake. Was she not conscious of that?
Well, she's conscious of that because she's already in trouble. It's just a question of how much more trouble. And when you
Could that be the reason she did all that you've just described, as opposed to being evidence of dominion and control over 177 grams of powdered cocaine in the closet? Could it all be explained because you had it in her sock?
Well, it could be, and that's certainly an alternative interpretation. But the question is, you know, looking at it from the various ways. Sorry.
Let's try a different hypothetical, and then you can bring back in the evidence of this case. But let's suppose you had someone's mother who didn't have any cocaine at all, did not have any drug paraphernalia at all, and the record showed this person with no connection to drugs whatsoever. was in a bedroom for 3 weeks and never used the closet, had their clothes outside on the floor, and then the police execute a warrant for the premises and they find cocaine in the men's shoebox in the closet. Is that person I've described in my hypothetical guilty of constructive possession?
No, I wouldn't think so. I think the case law is pretty clear that mere proximity, especially when you can't show that she knew there was cocaine in the shoebox, that's not enough. It's kind of like the car cases we have where the passenger in the back seat, you know, doesn't know that somebody else in the car has the cocaine. The only imputed knowledge, I think, in the car cases are to the driver or the owner of the vehicle, that they're imputed to know that someone else in the vehicle may be possessing contraband drugs, but not another mere passenger. And I think the situation Your Honor's described is more analogous to the mere passenger in the car there. There's nothing really to connect that lady with a cocaine distribution enterprise, but here there is evidence that connects her with it. Certainly it would have been better if the cocaine in the closet, there was pink dye in there or something else, but, you know, we don't have that. But there was enough evidence presented, including the rational inferences that a reasonable jury could draw from that, to convict her. And that's really the standard, is were we able to show the trafficking, the elements of that beyond a reasonable doubt. If there's any additional questions, I'll certainly try to answer those.
Well, does the record show that Ms. White actually was using that bedroom during the time that she was convalescing?
I thought the evidence was that she was at least had her clothes there. They were in large trash bags, and there was a black bag of hers that was in the bedroom, and I think that was where they found the scouring pad and I believe a spoon, and then there was a dresser and another smaller closet in that same bedroom where there was some other paraphernalia and some other material that appeared to be residue of cocaine in either the dresser or the other closet. I don't know that there was evidence that she was actually sleeping in there. I don't recall that. But at least her clothes were there, and some of her other possessions were there as well, the paraphernalia apparently for consumption.
I guess ultimately it comes down to the link that could be made inferentially between the pink rock cocaine found on her person and the powdered cocaine found in the walk-in closet. Your reference to her minding the store infers that she knew what was going on there, what her son was doing, and that she was somehow, as a co-conspirator, involved in operating out of the store. But it's arguably consistent with she had her own rock cocaine that she possessed with the intent to deliver that was different than what the store had available at that particular moment for other customers. And it sounds like it turns on the pot on the stove and what it was used for, and how can you link the suggested cocaine residue in the absence of any coloring agent to the pink rock cocaine found in her sock. Is that fair?
Well, I think that's certainly a big part of it. I mean, she may very well have used the false name because she knew she had drugs on her person, but do you start incurring other criminal charges by impersonating another person? In fact, she actually signed some court papers later on using this Jaya Parker fictitious name as well. You know, at what point do you cut this off? How many charges do you want to accumulate? And I think a rational trier of fact could also say, well, you know, she wants to cut this off to the point where she doesn't want to be associated with the trafficking weight because she knows there's a lot of drugs in this apartment and trafficking's because of the minimum mandatory sentence is more onerous or more serious charge than what she's going to have with possession with intent to deliver.
Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Thank you.
If I could just respond briefly, the fact that she gave a name, Jaya Parker, and had rock cocaine, pink rock cocaine in her sock, could be also was to go to show that she didn't know that there was cocaine inside the closet. If she was giving a different name, trying to avoid being arrested and concealing cocaine on her, thinking she could go undetected with the cocaine, that would be certainly a reasonable argument that she would have gotten rid of the pink rock cocaine rather than conceal it on her person and give a false name if she knew that the stuff was in the closet. This ongoing enterprise is also, and I hope I didn't lose you on that one, but is also somewhat troubling. The MoneyGram was sent by James White to Mr. Coleman the day before, and there was a $50 bill in the bag outside of the closet. Yet there was $1,200 cash inside the closet with the cocaine, which again shows that there's separate things going on here. There's stuff in the closet and stuff in the bedroom, $50 and then $1,200, 4 grams and 177 grams.
Your point there is that your client and Coleman were kind of a couple, and they wouldn't have been asking for money if they had access to $1,200 in the shoebox.
Absolutely. And they would have at least, presumably, and I hope I don't, they would have put the money together or kept the money together, presumably, if it was theirs, if it was all theirs. And they had, of course, all the implements to smoke the crack cocaine. I could submit to the court, too, that Mr. White, James White, the son, was arrested during the search warrant. He returned home, so it's not as though he was living there, and they never said he wasn't living there, so he pulled up in a car at the time the search was going on and was arrested, and so was another co-defendant inside the vehicle. So if he's out, you know, he's not out for day. Well, there's no indication that he wasn't there, at least during the search of the house. Again, I just those are the points I wanted to respond to. If there's any other questions,
thank you, counsel. Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.